We will talk about what Hillary Clinton had to say at the Democratic National Convention last night in our next hour this morning. But this hour, we'll talk about whether men and women have different distinct communication styles, whether men and women speak different languages. That's a concept that was made popular by the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. We are going to talk with a guest who says, no way. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock now on this Wednesday, August the 27th. And we are happy to have with us the author of the book, The Myth of Mars and Venus. Do Men and Women Really Speak Different Languages? Deborah Cameron says that's not the case. Deborah Cameron is the Rupert Murdoch Professor of Language and Communication at the University of Oxford. She is the author of several books, including The Myth of Mars and Venus. She joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, John Gray, the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, has made a lot of money telling us that's the case. Why do you say differently?
Well, I've been conducting research on real language use among men and women for over 20 years now, and I just got very impatient with reading and hearing endless claims about this, which I knew were exaggerations, overgeneralizations, and in some cases just pure fictions. I thought it was time people heard the other side of the story, which is really that you can't make these generalizations. Research shows that men and women are far more similar than different in the way that they communicate. And where there are differences, and there are some, they're not usually for the reasons that are suggested in these kinds of self-help and popular science books about the sexes. So I say different because the evidence says different.
Yeah, there is no evidence to back up the claims made by John Gray and others?
Well, people like John Gray are not really accountable to the evidence. Self-help writers, you know, are not scientists, and in many cases don't claim to be, though you know, sometimes they bandy around statistics and so forth. But actually, yes, if you look, these things generally don't have much of a scientific basis. In other areas, people are using science, but there is room for dispute about what the evidence really shows. I mean, a good example from just recently is that a book called The Female Brain made headlines all around the world by claiming that it had been found that men on average utter 7,000 words a day and women utter on average 20,000 words a day. So in other words, women talk almost three times as much as men. But on investigation, it turned out that that figure just came out of a self-help book, and when it was traced back to its source, it looked as though it had been made up. Some researchers in Arizona put it to a more scientific test, and they found there was no difference at all between men and women. The average for both sexes was around 16,000 words a day.
I read an interview with you that you claim men and women are from Earth, and maybe John Gray is from Uranus.
Yes. Yes, that's true. It seemed like a good joke at the time.
Well, I guess talk some more about these myths. That's myth number one, that men
women
and
are more talkative than men. Yes, yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of research about how much men and women talk, though not usually counting words, which is not a great measure of anybody's talkativeness. But what it finds is that if people are in situations where they're with their peers, where status doesn't matter much, where there's no particular task going on in the talk, then there's usually no difference between men and women. Mm. In more formal situations where status does matter, it's usually men who are found to talk more, but not because they're men and their brains are wired in a particular way. It's more because then the rule tends to be that in situations where status matters, people with more status talk more than people with less status. And it's still the case that that is connected to gender, that in most of these gatherings, you know, business meetings, seminars, mm-hmm. political debates, men will still outnumber women in the highest status positions. So there is a sort of simple explanation for that, which doesn't necessarily have anything to do with gender. And you can also explain the exceptions. You know, if it happens that you've got a gathering where the high status people are women, then often they will dominate the conversation.
We are talking with Deborah Cameron, the Rupert Murdoch Professor of Language and Communication at the University of Oxford. We're talking with her about her book, The Myth of Mars and Venus. Do men and women really speak different languages? 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your questions, your reactions. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. After we check the weather, we'll talk with Professor Cameron about why believing these myths are not only inaccurate, it's dangerous. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 17 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, August the 27th. Be sure to stay tuned for talk about the Democratic National Convention. We'll talk with a guest about what Hillary Clinton had to say last night, coming up in our 7 o'clock hour. The On Point special, live from the Democratic National Convention, is coming up at 9 o'clock this morning. Right now, we are talking with the author of The Myth of Mars and Venus, Deborah Cameron, who says that men and women do not speak different languages, contrary to popular belief. We're talking about some of these myths and how they got started and why this matters. And we welcome your thoughts and your questions. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We've talked a little bit about myth number one, that women talk more than men. This is not true. What about the general myth, Professor Cameron, that men and women just communicate differently?
Yeah, well, this comes in various versions. I think that John Gray's idea, and also Deborah Tannen's in You Just Don't Understand, is that women use language to make connections with others, whereas men just use it to either get things done or they treat it as a competitive sport. But once again, this is not really supported by very good evidence. Women are not always cooperative. I mean, Deborah Tannen made a lot of how, you know, girls and boys groups, when they're very young, play differently. Girls are more supportive, boys are more kind of competitive and adversarial. But actually, recent detailed research with groups of girls suggests that they're actually doing a lot of the same things. It's more that we have an ideal of how girls ought to be, and so in the past we've tended to overlook the fact that they're not always that nice. Anyone who's been a girl probably can bear that out.
What about the, I have heard this one more than once, as a manager in at Wisconsin Public Radio, I paid attention to this. Women managers, women supervisors in the business world don't necessarily, you know, make a demand of a subordinate. They will ask the subordinate to complete a task.
Well, you know, there was a very interesting and very detailed project done in New Zealand which involved 500 male and female managers in 22 different enterprises, both public and private. And they were looking at this question of whether men and women managers have different styles of doing things, different styles of leadership. And they found that there were not clear-cut differences. There was a spectrum of styles from very directive to very supportive and egalitarian, but they found men and women at all points along that spectrum. So, you know, arguments about whether women's style of leadership holds them back or whether it's an asset which we should be, you know, more into, really sort of fall on the evidence which shows that there aren't distinctive male and female leadership styles. Individuals are very different. You know, all these claims, these Mars and Venus claims, have a basic flaw in that they really don't take much account of the very big differences that there are among women and among men. All men aren't the same, all women aren't the same. And supposing that they are is actually quite damaging, because it means that both men and women are held to certain expectations, and those who don't live up to the sort of gender stereotype can find themselves being discriminated against. you know, not because there's anything wrong with the way they do things, but because they don't do things in the way expected of their sex. And political leaders like Hillary Clinton, their treatment shows this very clearly, I think. Hillary Clinton, during her campaign for the Democratic nomination, kind of couldn't win. She was being partly judged against the kind of male standard of leadership, so if she got emotional, she was criticized for being weak or manipulative. But if she behaved like a sort of male leader, she was criticized for, you know, being unfeminine, not being sufficiently caring and feeling. I think that makes a very difficult path for women to tread. It means they can't be themselves. They're always having to kind of trade off between, you know, these ideas of what makes a leader and these ideas of what makes a woman.
Well, we can talk politics during this hour, I guess, huh? Yeah. Let me take a call. Michael in St. Paul. Hi, you're on the air. Michael, are you there? Michael's not there. Michael, according to my producer, wanted to say that he believes that men and women do talk differently, that men are more straightforward and say what they mean.
Mm. Well, nobody's always straightforward and says what they mean, because if they were, people would think that they were very rude and aggressive. I mean, this myth comes about because I think, you know, a lot of people don't have a very clear idea of how language actually works. There are many, many occasions on which no speaker would be as direct and straightforward as possible. Though exactly how people, you know, manage these situations does differ a lot from culture to culture and community to community.
Yeah. So how straightforward was Hillary Clinton last night? Did you catch any of her speech?
No, I didn't. I don't know what happened last night. The time difference makes it a bit difficult.
Yeah. Myth number three, men and women's brains are hardwired differently when it comes to language. That's not true?
Well, I think the jury's still out. It's possible that it is true, but actually, if you really look at the research on this, at the moment it presents a very mixed picture. So, you know, there has been a rash of popular science books kind of presenting this idea of brain sex and language as part of that, that, you know, women are hardwired to be more verbal and that language is organized in their brains in a different way. But for every study which finds that to be possibly the case, you can find another study which didn't find any difference and a third one which found a different difference. So I think we're still struggling to make sense of the information that we have.
And men do not interrupt more than women?
No. In some situations they do. In other situations, you know, it may be the other way around. A lot depends on context. And once again, there are big differences within each gender group, which make it impossible to say men do this, women do that. Mm. It never applies to all men or all women.
But how about most? Men.
How about, sorry?
How about most?
Well, no. The thing is that what seem to be gender differences are often linked to something else, like status. As I said in the case of, you know, who talks more in formal situations. Status is a better predictor, but of course status isn't completely unconnected to gender. If you look at men and women in different communities or in different situations, you find different patterns. So it just isn't really possible to say most men do this, most women do that, without looking at what might be in between the gender and the behavior.
We're talking with Deborah Cameron. She is a professor of language and communication at the University of Oxford. She's talking with us about her book, The Myth of Mars and Venus. And we welcome your questions for her at 1-800-642-1234. Do you think that men and women speak different languages? Do you think that men and women have different communication styles? Deborah Cameron is here to say that there's really no evidence of that, that men and women are both from Earth. We welcome your questions and reactions. Let's talk some about why this matters. You mentioned that one consequence of believing this is that women can be discriminated against in the workplace, for example, and maybe not hired for a job based on what an employer might think her communication style is.
Yes. And actually, the same applies the other way around. So, you know, then women often get the benefit of the doubt when people are hiring for customer service jobs, because it's thought that they're better at, you know, making rapport with customers, making small talk, showing people that they care. But if the job is something that calls for, you know, authority and decisiveness, it's men who get the benefit of the doubt on the grounds that they communicate in a more direct and straightforward way. Now, in fact, and what the evidence shows is that there's so much variation among individuals, you really can't extrapolate from these stereotypes to the particular job candidate who's standing before you. You really have to try and assess the individual.
Yeah. You're also concerned, you say that this could have implications when it comes to our courts and criminal justice, even in rape cases.
Yes, there have been examples of this where, I mean, the idea that men and women habitually misunderstand each other because they have different communication styles has unfortunately proved very useful to men accused of rape and sexual assault and the lawyers defending them, who can try to make the argument that, okay, maybe the woman didn't consent, but she didn't refuse in a way that was sufficiently direct to make the man understand that. So he, in good faith, believed that she did consent. And if that kind of argument about, you know, misreading people's signals is accepted, it can lead to a man being acquitted or to him being punished more leniently because, you know, her communication style supposedly contributed. Now, the problem with this is there's really no evidence at all that men and women do systematically misunderstand each other because of communication differences. There is evidence that this can happen in cases where people are from very different ethnic groups, speaking different varieties of a language or different languages, and with very little social contact outside of the situation that's being considered. But no one has really made that argument stick in relation to gender. And as for the idea, I mean, women are given the advice, if you want a man to understand that you don't want to have sex, just say no. Actually, linguistically speaking, that's very bad advice. Because when we're refusing even the most, you know, ordinary invitations, we English speakers never just say no. If you say to me, would you like to go for coffee, and I, for whatever reason, I don't want to accept that invitation, I wouldn't just say no. Yeah. I would say,
I can't.
Well, I'd love to, but I promised I'd be home early today, or something like that. So in other words, I would hedge, I would, you know, express some interest in your invitation, and then I would make a kind of plausible, socially acceptable excuse. Now, men don't have any difficulty understanding that when, you know, in other situations. They do it themselves, research has shown, when they're refusing invitations. So why would it pose a difficulty for them when the context is a sexual invitation? The fact is, when they claim to be ignorant of this basic rule of English language interaction, it just isn't credible.
We will check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will welcome more questions, more calls for Deborah Cameron, the author of The Myth of Mars and Venus. Do men and women really speak different languages? She says that these are myths, that men and women do not communicate differently, do not misunderstand each other, don't have different communication styles, and we wonder what you think. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about the concept, our guest calls it the stereotype, that men are from Mars, women are from Venus. It's a phrase made popular by author John Gray, describing what he says are the many and vast differences in communicating between men and women. Well, our guest this hour, Deborah Cameron, who is a professor of language and communications at the University of Oxford, says there's no evidence to support these types of claims. She says that the evidence, the research shows that there is as much similarity and variation within each gender as between men and women, and that any differences there are often associated with social roles and relationships. The differences are not gender alone. We welcome your thoughts and questions for her at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Deborah Cameron is the author of The Myth of Mars and Venus: Do Men and Women Really Speak Different Languages? And back to the phones we go. Matt in Oshkosh joins us now. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I would like to ask your guest a question. If we are not different, as that's what I'm getting from her comments, that she feels we are not different, then essentially she is saying we are exactly the same. And my life experience will not allow me to accept that premise. I have interacted with women for 52 years, and we are vastly different at how we speak, how we think, how we approach different social situations, or whatever it is. So if we are not different, we are the same. I'd like to hear her comments on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm not disputing that there are some differences, and that where women and men differ in their life experiences, in what they do, in what roles they're playing in a particular situation, that will have an impact on the way they communicate. So I'm not actually saying that there are no differences at all. The evidence is quite good that there may be differences. What I am saying is that we're not these two completely different species with brains which are wired to see everything and do everything differently. And I think the evidence for that is that you just do not find universal differences between men and women in every culture, in every period of history, in every community, affecting every individual. You know, I think you make a false polarization that if I say we are not fundamentally different, I must be saying we're exactly the same. There is actually a possible position in between those extremes. But what I'm criticizing is the idea that you can generalize and say, this is the way men are, this is the way women are. The evidence just doesn't stand up. And, you know, of course people say, but when I read these books, I recognize this from my own life experience. Well, I would say that is because of a very widespread human tendency to pay attention to the things that match your expectations and pay much less attention to the things that go against them. I mean, my father believed that men were better drivers than women, that women were bad drivers, and he was absolutely alert to any example of a woman driving badly. If I, as a rebellious teenager, pointed out to him, women driving in a completely unremarkable manner, it often turned out that he literally hadn't noticed them. Or think of the way people read their horoscopes. You read a description of what a person of a certain star sign is like, or what you're like as a Scorpio or a Libra or whatever, and you pick out the things that do apply and kind of skate right over the things that don't. So, you know, I don't think we can safely generalize from our own experience.
Please try your calling.
Oh, I was going to let Matt have a follow-up, but he hung up. This isn't just language, but a listener named Dominic wants to know, I have heard the myth that men have a stronger sense of direction and are more spatially aware, while women are better at showing and feeling empathy for others. Does this hold true?
There's dispute about that. I'm not an expert on science having to do with spatial skills. As far as I can tell, the evidence for sex differences in spatial skills is better than the evidence for sex differences in verbal skills. However, I don't feel completely qualified to assess that.
How about the other thing we need
to bear in mind, though, is that these claims are always averages. They're basically saying, you know, the average man is thus and so compared to the average woman. We do have to bear in mind that, you know, most people by definition are not the average.
Steve in Fort McCoy joins us now. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Thanks for taking my call. I've been in the Army for 26 years now, and I've really noticed that the only difference between the male and female leadership in the Army, I trace it back to more regional than gender related. It just doesn't really seem to matter. If you got a good leader, you got a good leader. It doesn't matter male or female. It seems more like I said, regional differences instead of
For example?
Um, People from the East and West Coast seem to make decisions based on different things than people from the Midwest, for example. I mean, they take other things into consideration, it seems like. But as far as a woman from the Midwest is more likely to make the same decision as a man from the Midwest, is the gender differences compared to regional differences. Yeah. That's what I've noticed anyway.
Yeah, and putting a more of a language spin on this, Deborah Cameron, we always we do hear about Midwest nice. We want to be polite and kind.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no, I think that in language it's certainly true that both regional provenance and, in fact, social class make more difference than gender does. I found it interesting what your caller just said because, it goes to the point, a point that's substantiated by other research with, for instance, the managers I talked about before or police officers, for example, that if you put men and women into the same role so that they have to do the same things, they will tend to use the same communication style because, you know, so much of how we communicate is shaped by what we're trying to do and then, you know, what we have to accomplish. So it's not very surprising to find, for instance, that you know, women who become police officers talk in a very similar way to their male counterparts. And if you say to them, well, have you just taken on a male style so that you'll fit in with the guys? They'll say, no. And, you know, basically, to be a good police officer, there are certain ways that you have to talk. You need to be calm. You need to be dispassionate. You need to be decisive. You know, it's not that we're just trying to fit in. We're trying to do what the job demands. And I'm sure it must be the same in the military.
Thank you very much, Steve. Chad in Dubuque is with us now. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Just want to bring up a point in the book. It referred to men as being problem solvers, and women don't necessarily want us to solve their problems, but to listen to them. And an example of that, my wife came home from work one day, and she was frustrated and kind of upset. And, you know, I was trying to solve her problems, and she got upset at me, and she said, I don't want you to solve my problems. I just want you to hear me out.
That was in the gray books that you're talking about.
Yeah, men are from Mars and women are from Venus.
Right. So you want to know you find that to be true? Is that what you're saying,
yeah,
John?
Yeah, what I'm saying is I find it to be true from my experience. Is that necessarily not the case?
Well, I think one sort of interesting sidelight on this is research. There's not much of it, but there is a growing body of research, which is on same-sex couples, gay and lesbian couples, which seems to suggest that they actually have all the same problems as heterosexual couples. And that suggests to me that those problems are not necessarily to do with gender differences. They may be to do with differences between individuals. They may be to do with the sort of things that arise when any two people live closely together, you know, are trying to maintain an intimate relationship or are just sharing domestic space. You know, people have all the same conflicts and arguments when both of them are the same sex as when they're two different sexes. So I think we often put problems down to gender difference that might not be to do with it.
Our guest is Deborah Cameron. She is a professor of language and communication at the University of Oxford. She is the author of several books, including The Myth of Mars and Venus, Do Men and Women Really Speak Different Languages? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 13 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, August the 27th. Coming up after 7, we'll get reaction to Hillary Clinton's speech before the Democratic National Convention last night. We'll talk about what the Democratic primary race shows in terms of progress for women in politics, but our guest will say there's much further to go. That's coming up after 7. Right now, we're talking with the author of The Myth of Mars and Venus, who says men and women do not speak different languages, do not have vastly different communication styles, and that believing these myths made popular by popular culture, not only inaccurate, but can be dangerous. Deborah Cameron is a professor of language and communication at the University of Oxford, and our next caller is Nathan in Green Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. Listening to this discussion, it sounds like we need to make a distinction between sex differences and gender differences, sex differences being physical and gender differences being social constructs, of course. And there is a lot of popular perception that what John Gray says is true. I think it really strikes a chord because those gender expectations are being fulfilled in the daily lives of so many people, and the book resonates with because the power of expectations is so strong, and I think that so many times we do fulfill these roles, not because of inherent differences in the sexes, but because of those gender role constructs that we're fulfilling.
Reaction, Professor Cameron?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And we also have to take into account that the gender differences, the ones that come about for social reasons, are very variable. You know, you get different differences in different times and places, and you get a lot of individual variation, too. So, you know, we need to be sensitive to the fact that we're not all the same.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to go to, I think, we haven't heard from a woman all hour long, Professor Cameron.
And they don't get up this early.
Yeah, no, but that's not the case. I see this is just anecdotal. I haven't seen any scientific evidence, but we tend to have more male callers to our programs than female callers.
Uh-huh. I mean, that's because it's a sort of task-oriented, fairly formal context in which, you know, you gain status by saying something. So, you know, that's exactly what I would predict on the basis of previous research.
Yep. And that's what when we ask callers, women, why they don't call in more or what would make you call in. There was, though, anecdotally, I just don't, you know, have much to say on that topic, or I'm not an expert on that topic, feeling that they couldn't call in unless they were an expert on the topic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But Carolina in Green Bay is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
I'm glad that you called.
Thank you. Deborah, I have a question. It seems like the United States and some other countries, we're pretty much a patriarch society where male have a dominant role. But there are other areas, other countries that have matriarch societies. And I'm wondering what you can tell us about the context or the communication between men and women in those places?
Well, I don't know about matriarchal societies. There are societies that are much more gender egalitarian. I don't think any anthropologist would claim that they've ever found a society in which women have the kind of, you know, structural dominance that would be the analog of a patriarchal society. But there certainly are very large cultural differences. For instance, in the book, I talk about a couple of societies where it's generally believed that women are much more direct than men and also much more aggressive. They're the ones who dominate the use of obscene language, whereas men pride themselves on being very, you know, very diplomatic and preserving harmony and being able to control their feelings better. Now, in this case, it's what we would call the Venusian or female way of communicating used by men, which has the social prestige, which I think is very interesting. But certainly, you know, there are plenty of cultures reported in the anthropology literature where it would appear that men are from Venus and women are from Mars. So that is certainly a possibility. You know, how the sexes communicate has a great deal to do with what the beliefs and expectations are about what's feminine and what's masculine, and they do vary quite a lot.
What about the myth I often hear? I don't know if it's a myth or not. You often hear that women want to talk about their feelings. They want to talk about their relationships. They want to ask their boyfriends, what are you thinking right now? And men supposedly would rather, you know, be in the dentist chair than talk about that.
Yes, I think that in certain cultures that possibly isn't a myth. But I don't think you can extrapolate from that you know, women have some kind of innate obsession with emotion. actually, talking about feelings is something that both sexes appear to do equally, but in some respects differently. So there was a study earlier this year that looked at men's and women's use of, I think, 180 expressions referring to emotions and attitudes. And the researchers were actually surprised by how much similarity there was, that men and women basically used the same quantities of much the same expressions. The only big difference was that the men made more use of the most obscene swear words. Strangely, no one ever uses that as an argument that men are the more emotionally expressive sex.
What about men don't hear their wives or girlfriends ask them something when they're watching football on TV?
Well, I think we all have the capacity not to hear something someone's saying to us when we're otherwise engaged, don't mm-hmm. you think? I don't think that's specific to men. I mean, we all have strategic ways of deterring or deferring communications that we're not at that point very interested in hearing. I think men get a very bad rap, actually, from the myth of Mars and Venus. I think it's tremendously patronizing to men, sort of suggesting that they are these clueless, inarticulate, verbally challenged idiots. And I think it is quite interesting that men haven't been more indignant about this. I mean, some of these books put men on a par with dogs. There's one called If Men Could Talk, which really belongs, I think, right up there with Lassie. Mm-hmm. All those old episodes where one human turns to another and says, "Hey, wait a minute, I think he's trying to tell us something."
Yeah.
I mean, men are just not that idiotic. And if they're prepared to put up with all this stuff that suggests they are, I think that tells us something about, you know, how communication is really valued. I think in some contexts, men have realized that it's like housework, that there's something to be said for being thought incompetent at it. It means that there are things you don't have to do.
Yeah. More callers. Krista in Waukesha. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I was calling in response to one of the earlier callers that stated that his wife likes to express herself and just wants to be heard while he wants to solve her problems. And throughout my entire life, I have found that I have been more on the problem-solving side. I was educated as an engineer. I've always been more interested in the sciences and math and have not found myself to be like the other, quote, women, unquote, that he was referring to, who tend to just want to express themselves and have themselves heard. So I'm offering that it's less of a sex difference and more of a style difference or just a way an individual's mind happens to be geared to think.
Mm-hmm. Professor Cameron?
Yeah, I would agree that there is, there are women who are like Krista. There are women who are like something else. And I think there are probably quite a lot of both women and men who sometimes have the one impulse and sometimes have the other. You know, sometimes I want to ventilate and want someone to listen. Other times when I bring up a problem, I am hoping that there will be a sensible discussion of how to solve it. I think, we span the spectrum and we focus, too much. What stereotyping is focusing on one thing that may really exist. It doesn't have to be a complete myth in the sense of, something that doesn't exist. But we exaggerate its prevalence or its dominance over other possibilities. So, I think, women come in all varieties. So do men.
Matt in La Crosse is with us. Hi, Matt.
Hi. So, hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes, all right. So I had heard, and, I heard this in school, but it wouldn't be the first time I heard something in school that wasn't accurate, that in women, the membrane that connects the two halves of the brain is thicker than it is in men. So women have a hard time separating something as, like, a completely emotional situation or a completely logical situation, where men sort of have an ability to switch between the two. They can recognize that, this is something that needs logic, this is something that needs, a little more emotion. And, the thickness of that membrane makes it so that for women, even in a situation they recognize should be logical, there's still the emotional, ties to it, so to speak.
I hadn't heard that one. I don't know if I like that thick brain
I think what Matt is referring to is some claims that were made about a part of the brain called the corpus callosum.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was thought for a while, but as I understand it, it's no longer thought now because newer research has failed to replicate that finding.
Mm.
Now, when you really have to be quite cautious about claims that are made about the brain, particularly if you know, you're not reading them in a scientific article, but you're reading them in some sort of popular book, because as I said earlier, the picture is actually very mixed, and you know, no scientist would want to trust one study, one finding. You need to get the same finding over and over again before there can be much certainty about the truth of it, let alone what it means, which is also open to interpretation.
Yeah, we have less than a minute to go. Professor Cameron, do you think we'll get beyond this Mars-Venus divide?
I don't know. I think that the reason it's come back into fashion is precisely because many of us are seeking reassurance in a world where it does seem that gender divisions and differences have broken down more and more. So I think it's a kind of nostalgic anxiety response, and as things settle down, we might get past it. But as you said right at the beginning, there is a lot of money to be made out of it, out of products that peddle it. And, you know, that's why I'm interested in kind of trying to counter its influence. Then people should be aware there's another side to the story.
Thank you so much for being with us. Deborah Cameron is the author of The Myth of Mars and Venus. Thanks to Carmen Jackson, Cynthia Schuster, and Michelle Kofel for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.